TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 622, and I am Libya, your host, TV and film editor, and we have returning guests.
Malik El-Amin, artistic director of Griot Theater.
Hi, I'm Allison, and I write reviews for Six Degrees of Geek.
And this is Tom. I chair Visual Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Screen Time podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
All righty, let's get started. Tom, hit us with the news. What do you got?
News. Amazon has announced that my old ass director Megan Park has set a YA drama series, Sterling Point, with Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage of the OC, executive producing, and also Lucky Chap, which produced my old ass. The Muhammad Ali series, The Greatest, has cast Omari Hardwick as Cassius Clay Sr. and Dana Gurrier as Odessa Bird Clay. Jalen Best was previously announced as Ali. Lots of news from Apple TV+. For All Mankind spinoff, Star City has cast Ree Sifan as chief designer and Anna Maxwell Martin as Lyudmila, the head of KGB surveillance department. Neuromancer series adaptation has cast Mark Strong in the lead role. Kate Mara joins Elizabeth Moss, Kerry Washington in the series Imperfect Women based on Arminta Hall's novel. Annette Bening joins Anya Taylor-Joy in limited series Lucky, adapted from Marissa Stapley's novel. And Matthew McConaughey, Woody Harrelson comedy series, has cast Holland Taylor as Ma Mac, McConaughey's mother. CBS is planning to spin off a show about the CIA. So the tentatively named FBICA will have, they're going to introduce three characters on the Mothership series that would be leads on the spinoff. Disney Plus has announced a Jonas Brothers Christmas comedy movie. HBO has picked, say what?
I was being sarcastic. That was my sarcastic yet.
Hey, there's a lot of kids out there who probably enjoy that. HBO has picked up White Lotus for season 4 ahead of season 3's premiere. House of Dragons season 3 has cast James Norton from The Nevers as Ormond Hightower. Hulu has renewed English Teacher for season 2 but canceled How to Die Alone. They will premiere a documentary about the film Rust, examining Helena Hutchins' accidental death in the aftermath. Tan France from Queer Eye is going to guest on the upcoming comedy series Deli Boys, and the Buffy reboot from Chloe Zhao and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
That's not a sarcastic yay. That's like a real yay. Go ahead.
That is nearing a pilot order at Hulu. NBC has set a bunch of people to guest on the SNL 50th anniversary special, including Dave Chappelle, Tom Hanks, Kim Kardashian, Sabrina Carpenter, and more. And as Comcast prepares to spin off its cable assets, except for Bravo, CEO Brian Roberts has announced a broadcast plus streaming strategy that will focus on NBC, Bravo, and Peacock. Netflix, to no one's surprise, has canceled Sandman because of Neil Gaiman's legal issues.
We still get season 2.
We are still getting season 2. They have greenlit a reboot of Little House on the Prairie. Jeremy Allen White is attached to a limited series adaptation of Enigma Variations, a bisexual romance drama from the author of the novel Call Me By Your Name, Andre Ackerman. Before Lena Dunham's first scripted comedy series, Too Much, debuts, they've locked down a first look production deal with her company, Good Thing Going, for projects. At PBS has announced that Leslie Manville and Tim McMullen will reunite for BBC masterpiece Marble Hall Murders, the third and final installment of Anthony Horowitz's Susan Ryland mystery series. Peacock canceled Hysteria after one season. Jennifer Garner will star in five-star weekend series adaptation of Elin Hildebrand's novel. And The Burbs series adaptation, starring Kiki Palmer, has cast Jack Whitehall from The After Party, Paula Pell from Girls 5 Ella, Julia Duffy from Palm Royale, Mark Proksh from What We Do in the Shadows, and Kapil Palwakar from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. And that's the news.
All right, let's start off with the shows. First up, we're going to do The Agency, and we're going to do episodes 5 through 8 really fast because this show... I was gonna say it started well, but it started mediocre and it continued mediocre. So I don't feel like it needs a lot of attention other than to just kind of get through the main story points of what happened and just let's bring out the stuff that we think worked and not really dwell on the things that didn't work. Who wants to go first on with those criteria?
Well, I somewhat differ from your intro there, so maybe I'll go
Okay.
first because of that.
All right.
I wanted to like the agency from the very beginning, and I had lots of problems liking it from the very beginning. I happen to think that the most recent three episodes were the best episodes of the series. And in particular, why I found I so. Our prior challenges with this show is you have a CIA agent who acts like he's never understood anything about intelligence, the way he behaves when he returns home from assignment. And he's making all of these unforced errors, and no one seems to be observing that he's making these unforced errors. That's a problem for much of the show. What I appreciated about the most recent episodes is we start to see other people who are good at what they do. In particular, I liked the Russian person who is dropping breadcrumbs for them to figure out who he is and how to contact him. And he's using these old school intelligence tools to communicate through back channels. And basically, it's like, if you can figure out where I am and how to talk to me, I'll give you the information that you're looking for. That felt fun. It was still high stakes, but it also was a bit like a game. I appreciated that aspect of the show. I also liked, pulling straight from the headlines, having the Russian mercenary boss, and watching his world when they tried to get one of his people to turn against him. I thought the actor who played the mercenary boss was incredible. He was both dangerous and interesting and smart. And the stakes of how they tried to get his secretary to turn against him, and they didn't care about her safety at all.
Here's the thing about that particular thing. I have a comment, which is why are you switching out someone's boots? Boots are something that you break in and they become part of your feet and you know them. So switching out his worn-in boots for some brand new boots, or even if they weren't even brand new, even if they were boots on somebody else's feet, they wouldn't have felt right when he put them on. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. Anyway,
Well, I
continue.
actually, my bigger, if we talk about, I was talking about what I liked about it.
Okay.
I actually think the biggest problem with that whole premise was it was never clear what they actually had against the woman to make her turn against him. They pretty much met her at this shop and was like, "Hey, give us information or we'll tell him we're talking to you." She had never been talking to them. So, unless I
Well, I
missed.
think that that was the point. That was that, I mean, he's so paranoid that just them making the suggestion that she was talking to CIA, even though it was a complete setup, would
Right.
have endangered her life. That was the
Right.
point, I think.
I thought that was weak. Because it seems to me, given where she landed, that
It was just dead still.
the better choice would have been, "Hey, I was at the shop this morning and this woman approached me. Here's everything I know about it. What do you
Right.
want me to do?"
Right.
And I think that would have been the approach
And especially
that
because she was not a good spy. She, like, every time she did something, she looked terrified,
But so that was good. That was good. I thought the actress was convincing. So all of that is to say, I was actually more intrigued by the most recent episodes because of the different storylines and characters that they brought in. And there was a little less focus on how bad the central character is at being a CIA agent.
I think the thing that I really liked, especially about the last episode or the last two episodes, is his audacity in assuming that Samia, once he her Samia, once he told her the truth and said, "Hey, I'm a CIA agent. I've been one this whole time. Hey, don't you want to come work with me and I'll give you my protection?" And she repeatedly told him, like, "Look, dude, even if I did want to come work with you, they will kill my family." And he was like, oh, but you'll be safe. And she's like, but they'll kill my family. And she told him that like three or four times. And then he was surprised when she didn't back him up. I was like, are you not hearing her speak to you? And I really like that she stuck by her guns and she's thinking that they still might kill her. But her thing is because she did, have an affair with him for years. And so they might have doubts about her and everything like that. And they might kill her, but they won't kill her family. And that to
And
her.
it wasn't just her family. She said, I'm not going to betray my country.
Thank you.
She's
Yes. I
still a
like that too.
patriot.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was great too. I thought all of that was great. And the fact that he could not conceive of her not loving him more than her country is just, I was like, dude, come on.
That's what
So
they call privilege, right?
I really liked her perspective. That is what I like the most about the last episode is just we got her perspective and her walk into that plane not knowing if she was going to get off of it. They might kill her. She doesn't know, but she's willing to do that for her country. And I did really like that. Tom, really quick, or Allison, really
I
quick,
bailed.
couple minutes.
I was
Oh,
too
you
bored.
bailed.
I was too bored with the first four episodes. My time's more valuable.
I'm not
Yeah,
going to
no.
argue with you.
I saw I watched it to the bitter end, and I feel cheated having done that. Because really, it's I think the high point is like the bits that don't involve him. When you're watching people who are actually competent at what they do, who know what they're doing, and some of them are the enemy.
Well, my thing is, why did he have that fight with that guy in the parking garage?
It was so much. It's so nonsensical, and he acts like a drug addict almost. I mean, he's just so completely single-minded on everything he does has to, is to be with her, even when she says no. And it makes him look like a crazy stalker. It makes him look like an idiot. And this is supposed to be our hero. This is supposed to be the guy that we're rooting for. And I mean, I want my heroes to have certain flaws, but I mean, he's flawed in a way that you can't root for. And I just I it was such torture to watch him. And I love Michael Fassbender. I mean, he's doing a great job in terms of acting, but the character is just appallingly bad. And I'm much more interested actually in the other characters around him than I am with him and his obsession with Samia.
So my thing is, I really liked, like I said, I liked how they dealt with her. But the issue I had too with this last episode is he gets outmaneuvered. The Chinese guy brings the disc, and he's like, "We have a deal." And he sees that he's lost, and so he picks a fight with this dude in the parking garage. And the only thing that happens, because he doesn't question him, because I thought, is he gonna? I was like, he's gonna drag this guy away and get the answers to his question. No. He just wanted to beat the dude up. What? Why? What are we doing?
Yeah,
So
accomplishes nothing.
it accomplished zero things
Let me
other than for him
suggest
to be
that
petty.
were the premise of this show, we have a guy who's in the CIA and he's really bad at it. Look what happens. Like, that could be an interesting show. Like the greatest American hero, right?
Oh,
He's a
wow.
superhero, but he's really bad at being a superhero. That can be an interesting premise, but they don't actually lean into that as acknowledging that he's really bad at what he does.
I think they're
So
trying to say that the lo his love for her has blinded him and made him just dumb. Like, I think that's the premise of what they're going for, but it does not make interesting watch,
no.
especially because once she finds, because he's been lying to her this whole time, and once she finds out who he really is, she's like, you know what? I'm out. So it's not
Texas.
like an epic love story or anything at
No.
all. Like, no,
And
it's a
I love
very
his
different thing.
surprise when she says no to him. It's like, but how can you be saying that? It's like, aren't you paying any attention?
All
No.
right, let's wrap this one up and move on. All right, next up, we're gonna talk your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And it is a show on Disney Plus that is technically, I guess, designed for kids, but I am loving it. It is real. It's like an alternate universe of Spider-Man where instead of Tony Stark being the one who recruits him to be Spider-Man and to bring him in and get his suits together, instead it's Norman Osborn. Yeah, Norman yeah. Osborn, who recruits him in almost the exact same scene. So I like the symmetry of that, of having almost the same scene.
Voiced by Colman Domingo.
Voiced by Colman Domingo.
Making the Osborns black explains the funky hairdos that don't really work with Anglo dudes.
But yeah, I thought that it's a good like alternate universe. Then we have Doctor Strange show up and blow up his school in the first 5 minutes. Thought that was kind of great. And just to see, and I like that they kind of give you the origin story, but like they also skip it. So like we see the spider bite him, but then we skip to a month later and he's already got his suit and he's already got, you know, he's already doing Spider-Man stuff. So I thought that was a good choice.
It was interesting choice. It's also interesting that the spider comes from a different dimension in this origin story.
Right.
So it almost allows them to say, hey, we're not going to give you this piece of the story that you've seen many, many, many times before. So it's like, the spider from this other dimension bites him and now he's Spider-Man. And now let's go on and tell the story we want to tell. I also just want to say, just in terms of, you know, you talked about whether it's for kids or not. We know that many, many shows that are theoretically for kids also very much are for adults because they recognize people might be watching it, you know, as a family. I think that this show, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, achieves that in a way that our prior show, Skeleton Crew, that we talked about before, does not. So I had no moments of kind of being bothered by the fact that I'm watching an animated show. If this show feels like it's for me, but I also know my son enjoys it too. So I think that's what a show is supposed to do. I found it really successful.
I think it's interesting that they it's kind of MCU adjacent because they reference events and characters from kind of standard MCU, except for Spider-Man's not involved when Stark and Rogers have their teams opposed to each other at the airport, as they were in Captain America Civil War. And they also went with a younger version of Aunt May that I have nicknamed Aunt MILF for the past few years for obvious reasons. I think it's interesting that that he gets an internship at Oscorp and with three other students, one of which is Amadeus Cho in another continuity of comic books becomes a Hulk. I thought it was interesting that Norman Osborn's got the cameras and Peter's doing an internship. So he catches him in the act of changing and Peter tries to ignore it or tries to deny it. And Osborn's like, dude, this is my private camera. Nobody's pranking me on my private camera.
Oh no, that was so, it's a prank, right? It's a prank.
Yeah.
And so initially so Peter turns down the offer. And then after the next adventure, he accepts the offer because he knows he could use a man in the chair.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. I appreciate that they sampled the 67 cartoon theme song in the new, you know, 2025 theme song. But yeah, it is kind of refreshing. I don't mind the animation style. If I see one more fanboy complaining, this cartoon looks too cartoony. It's like, you're a moron.
I actually loved the look that they adopted because they're trying to make it look like a comic book.
Comic book.
You know, they've got the you know, really dark inking, you know, and all of that. It's very graphical. And at the same time, I mean, the characters move really well. So it's not like limited animation, you know, like you're watching one of those Saturday morning things. They put a lot of thought into this. I think that, you know, the graphics were definitely a choice. And I think stylistically, they're handling it beautifully. That's actually one of the things that I really love about this particular cartoon is the look of the thing and the choices that they made artistically.
And Ryan Meinerding, who does a lot of the concept art for all the MCU live action and animated, he did the concept art for this too. So, you know, there are aspects that are very, that look a little bit more like the comics than the movies, but it looks good, and I like the 2.5D style.
Yeah, and I mean it's they obviously take great pride in it because their closing credits always show like, the sketches of the characters and the developments of them and the different costumes and things like that, and they show you just right out there. It's like, yeah, we this is a deliberate choice. So I think they did a great job with it. I loved it.
Speaking of choices, so this is a cultural difference here. Spidey calls his aunt just by her first name, May. He doesn't put that what they call, he don't put a handle on it. He don't call her auntie or nothing like that. So it's interesting to me that as I watch it and I keep hearing him call her May, I was like, that's your aunt, boy. Don't talk to her like she's your little friend. That's my personal reaction. But it works in the reality of the show that they've created. But I just had to point that out. He doesn't call her aunt.
Well,
He
she's
sometimes.
only about like 15 years older than he is. I
But that's
mean,
still about respect.
in
She's the
my
one,
culture.
yeah, she's the
yeah, but
one
I
in charge
assume
of his
that
household.
they've had a different kind of relationship. I mean, God knows every iteration we have seen, Aunt May just keeps getting younger and younger and younger. Eventually, she's going to be just,
Be the
a
same
baby
Hannah
in a
Montana
crib.
if they reboot one more time.
Like, yeah, I mean, she's just going to be younger than Peter eventually. But
right.
yeah, I think it's I was sort of like, oh my God, does the world need another Spider-Man? And especially since we have those great, animated
Into the
movies that are
Spider-Verse,
coming out.
yeah.
The Spider-Verse stuff is brilliant. And so I was thinking, oh God, do we really need this? But I'm really enjoying it. I'm finding it to be an excellent show. It's beautifully produced. And the voice acting is top notch, and the animation I think is great. And the stories so far are very compelling. I think it's really a great iteration of Spider-Man. I do appreciate the whole alternate universe approach to this as well.
All right, well, let's wrap this one up. I think we're saying thumbs up, and we'll
Definitely.
keep covering this. They keep giving us a lot of episodes, which is throwing me off. We get a lot every week, but I love it. Next up, we're going to talk Prime Target, and we're going to talk the first three episodes, I believe, of Prime Target. And I will say the first episode of Prime Target really was interesting. It really was like, oh, this concept of numbers and prime numbers and all that stuff was really intriguing. And the only negative that I would say, which it can kind of be weighty a little bit, is that the lead guy, he's a little bland. Like, I feel like they
Could
wanted
you
to.
talk a little bit just about the concept of the show a little more before we go into that? Just like overall.
Sure. Overall, I like the concept of the show in that the prime numbers are like this. There's like this other avenue that people aren't aware of or are meaning, and that the government is keeping an eye on all the top mathematicians to make sure none of them discover this the fundamental nature of prime numbers, because they were like, if they do, then they can crack all the codes of the of everything of
Right, so
society.
our
Oh.
central character is this once in a generation math talent. The government, the NSA, is watching his teacher because they, at the moment, his teacher is one of the most brilliant mathematicians. And it turns out that the one that they needed to have been watching was the student.
Right.
And then the secondary major character is actually the person who was assigned by the NSA to watch the teacher. And she's just doing her regular surveillance and figures out, because ultimately the teacher, we think, commits suicide, and she ends up piecing together the idea that perhaps he was murdered based on the research that was happening. So just
Right.
from a premise standpoint, in terms of what the show is, where it's a show looking at math nerds, which is an interesting concept in the first place.
I agree.
I
I want to see the site, the dig site that's in, I can't remember what country that's in.
Iraq.
Like, yeah,
Iraq.
that seems like that's where the story is. I was like, can we go there? I'm tired of being in the classroom. Let's go there and figure out what's going on. Like, that seems
We'll get
like
there
that's where it's
eventually.
going. I know, but I just want to get there faster.
I thought that they got into the story much faster in Prime Target than on the age. Is it the agency? Whatever. Because it's the first. I mean, we only get David Morrissey in one episode, except for we get flashbacks in further episodes. But once they, I mean, that plot engine kicked in soon, which I recommend to all showrunners out there, get the story started. And like Malik said, the math geek stuff, like I double checked them when they said 204 is a very special number. And I'm like, ooh, I never knew that. I'm really intrigued by the older African Briton professor
Oh,
who's
the
got
one with
Alzheimer's,
Alzheimer's, right.
but you wonder, was he like the first generation of prodigies? And when he has a moment of lucidity to be able helpful to our young leading, Leo Woodall's character, it's kind of cool. I like that actor. He's a good character actor. But it's I think it's a solid thriller. Some of the critics rave, this is the best conspiracy thriller of the year. It's like, well, the year's new, so let's cover our horses.
It's
But no,
January.
it's
It's we're
engaging.
like a
It's
month
engaging.
and a half
Yeah.
into this year, so
It's
yeah.
engaging. I like Woodall. He was the honey trap in season two of the
White
thing on the
Lotus.
island. Thank you. It was the White
Oh,
Lotus.
okay.
But man,
My
his career is he is the title character in the new Bridget Jones movie. Bridget Jones Mad About the Boy, because he's like 20 plus years younger.
I want to see him in something else. I feel like they were like, okay, you're playing a math nerd. And so he's like, okay, I'm just going to come bring everything down.
Well, they've
I'm
also
going to
put
bring.
him, he's also kind of on the spectrum too.
Yes, I got
Yes.
that. I got that. Yes. I'm really enjoying his performance in this show. I don't know him from other shows,
I
so
don't either. Yeah.
I'm just watching this actor play this role. To me, he almost feels like Hamlet playing this character.
Okay,
He's
I'm intrigued now. Go on.
got this melancholy in him, and that is underneath everything else that's happening. He has a hard time caring about anything other than
Yes.
math.
Yes.
And so to me, I find his character incredibly compelling. I love how when he gets assigned to his new teacher, he's basically like, prove to me you're good enough to be my
I saw
teacher.
that.
I
I was like,
love that. He's
wow.
like,
That's some arrogant, but that's some arrogance though. That's some
it
serious
is, and it's
arrogance.
great. And it's great that the teacher was affronted by it, but
Yeah.
realized he had to pass the test in order to advise him. I love how, so he has this homosexual encounter with the bartender, which, by the way, I think he should suspect the bartender, but we'll see if anything comes of that. And the bartender was like, oh, you haven't told your family you're gay. He's like, I'm not anything. And based on his characterization, I could understand he doesn't identify as gay. He has a hard time.
Connecting.
And
Yeah.
so I find his character compelling. His character is also left-handed, which most gray people on the planet
I
are.
saw that. Yes. I noticed that as well. Mr. Left-handed guy. Yes, I see where you're going with that.
I'm really excited by his portrayal of the character. And just speaking of actors, the woman who plays Taylor Sanders also, you could see how, well, she might have been cast for her looks, but even from the intro of her character, the subtleties of what you learn about her attitudes and her relationships with the people around her, I think are quite complex. So I'm really excited by the performances in the show as well.
I think we had different takes on it. I'll go back and think about it again. And I did pick up on all the stuff you're talking about him being on the spectrum and all that, but it felt a little flat to me. Like I saw that the actor was doing. That's why I want to see him in something else. But anyway, let's move on. Next up, we're gonna talk about Paradise. And this show is starring Sterling K. Brown,
Sterling K. Brown.
who I love off the top. Like I was already was like, okay, I'm ready to love this show. And it comes off at first because it starts in like it jumps around in time. So you're not quite sure what time period you're in from scene to scene sometimes. You got to really pay attention. And then they have the big twist at the end, which somebody was like, it's in the title. And I was like, okay, fair. It is in the title.
Yeah, but still.
But it was a good like flip or changeroo on you where you didn't I didn't see it coming, which is that he's supposed to be the president, part of the president's detail. The president's retired. He's still part of the detail, and you think that he's
He's not
just retired
retired.
to, yeah. Well, he's out of office. Like his term, it seemed like his term was up, and that's why they're just hanging out at this house in the suburbs. They're not at the White House because half of the scene, you're at the White House and then you're in the suburbs. And so you're thinking, oh, he's retired, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they
And
even
then
have a scene where they actually he actually says, I'm going to want you around for, when
when
these
you're
4 years are over.
exactly. So they do a lot to mislead you. And then when you get to the end and you realize they're in some really crazy bunker that's big enough to have this entire neighborhood in it, and you're like, wait, what? And
It's
then you're
like
like, wait, I'm watching Silo?
Mount Weather, which is a real thing, by the way.
Yeah,
Now
so go
I
ahead.
was impressed with that the one twist that they did because I went into it just figuring, oh, this is going to be your typical thriller.
Right.
This is going to be a murder and they're going to investigate and they're going to find a conspiracy and blah 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 and Barry wrote and then they did the twist at the end and they do drop breadcrumbs. I mean, one of the
Yeah.
first things I was thinking when he was running through the neighborhood is, wow, this looks like Stepford.
Because all the houses were the
This has
same,
got, yeah,
everything was the same.
it just had that feeling, and
Cookie
I'm
cutter.
going, this is just, yeah, this is way too utopian. I was thinking that's just kind of weird. But then I dismissed it because we were on to other things. And when it gets to the end, and the first thing you see, actually, even before the ceiling, is the guy with the ducks, programming them and putting them in the water. I was like, oh, okay, very good. Okay. Unfortunately, that for me is like the most interesting thing they did. And once they got past that, we were back to the conspiracy thriller thing. And I'm finding the rest of it really kind of overwrought and predictable.
I
It's
mean,
not unentertaining, so I'm still watching it, and God knows the cast is fantastic.
Sarah
But I'm
Silverman is
not finding
great.
it.
I
It's like
love
they
her.
had that one twist that was great, and then since then it's been kind of like, by the numbers, honestly.
We've only had a couple more episodes, so I'm not upset
Yeah,
about that
but
yet.
I mean,
Yeah, I think they have more coming. I'm being confident in it because I really think the cast is phenomenal.
I'm kind of with Allison. I think this is a case where I generally like a lot of what Dan Fogelman does. I don't think he was the right person to do this show because his real wheelhouse is family type shows, interpersonal relationships, and some of that's in here. But the conspiracy thriller stuff, it kind of reminds me because some of the twists afterwards have been so predictable. There's one in three, and then it just feels too rote for me.
I think one of the episodes I would agree, but I don't know. You can have a one-off episode. But Malik, what were your thoughts?
So in general, I think it's a great show. We've already talked about all of the actors are incredible, so that helps. It kind of whatever you think about the story, it helps when you've got great actors sharing the screen with one another. It helps you kind of get past some of the things that perhaps aren't as exciting. I might echo a little bit of what Tom said, but in a slightly twisty way. Maybe not that Dan Fogelman was the wrong person to write it, but it's almost like they said, "Hey, Dan, can you do some of the This Is Us stuff with this premise?" So the idea that they're going back and forth between time is very much This Is Us, and they're trying to do that here. But one, we all saw This Is Us, and it doesn't quite feel like it works as organically in this show.
I think it worked in the pilot, but I think after that, it doesn't work as well.
And so the other thing I would say is, so I like the premise that they're underground. I don't think they fully earned the twist revelation at the end of the pilot because I don't think they actually gave us enough clues throughout to know that that's what was going on. I wonder early on, gee, the Secret Service agent lives that close to the president. But other than that, all of the things they showed us right before they revealed they were underground, some of those things might have been interesting to reveal earlier in the episode so that it would be possible to have put it together. A lot of what's important is about the relationships, is about the sense of betrayal that Sterling's character has
For the
by the
president.
president who left his wife out there to be exploded or whatever happened outside and didn't allow him to save her when they knew this catastrophic event was coming, which I think is an interesting, we didn't really talk about that, but just the premise that the government knows a world-ending event is coming. And they, what's interesting is, does the government make the plan or do private billionaires make the plan
Apparently a
or
private billionaire.
what that combination is to
Yep.
pick people to survive that catastrophic event. So, I mean, that premise I think is a really rich premise to work through. I'd say the one other just challenge, the character of Sinatra is an interesting character. I love that they give us a sense of empathy for her with the loss of her child. We don't have direct empathy for her as a character yet. So, yes, losing a child is an emotional thing, but I think what they didn't give us early enough was, are we supposed to care about her directly? And so I'm waiting for the next episodes to see where we go, one in terms of our relationship to that character, and also who's the bad guy? Like, is she the bad guy or is she a red herring?
Well, I think
Yeah.
one of the problems that I have with this show actually is with her character. Because on the one hand, she's depicted as being sort of a female
Sympathetic.
Elon Musk,
Oh, that's not what I meant.
multi-billionaire who's just cut off from everybody else, has the resources to build this enormous facility for people to be in, and at least seems to be like the evil head of a conspiracy. And on the other hand, she's a working mom who goes to the supermarket with her kids and
That
gets
is
them
no, but
ice
they showed that
cream.
scene. That scene was before she became a billionaire.
No,
Because,
but it
yeah.
wasn't. There
Oh,
were
no,
things
you're
that were
right.
happening
Oh, that's
while
right.
she
That's
was
right.
that
That's
rich.
right.
And I'm thinking, what billionaire do you see shopping at the local market?
That's true.
And they just give her, they put her into to positions that she simply wouldn't be in with a
Right.
per as a person with those kinds of resources. She'd have staff to do that. She would
Absolutely.
be she part of the problem with people who have that kind of money is how removed they are from normal living and the average people. They are just completely cut off in their own little fantasy world. So we're not getting that with her. It's like they conceived her as one character and then said, but you know what? It would be really neat if we did this with her. And they never married those two aspects. They just threw them together in a blender.
Yeah.
So I think that, and it's a shame because the actress who plays her is
Julianne
fantastic.
Nicholson.
She's wonderful. She's wonderful, but the material she's being given is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that she really works so far as a character.
Well, let's move on. I'm still enjoying Paradise and I think it's going somewhere cool and I want to see where that
Please.
is. Yeah.
Hope so.
All right, next up we're going to talk Severance and we're going to talk episodes 3 and 4. And what the heck happened in episode 3? I know 4.
That was where he at the end of which he goes through
Oh,
the
he gets
reintegration.
reintegration
Right.
procedure.
So that was the end of 3, but before that, he gets this bright idea to burn words into his irises, which
Our retina.
retina,
Retina.
thank you. To burn it in his retina, which this doctor points out, you could basically blind yourself.
Oh,
What are
you
you
could go
doing, you
blind and it's not
idiot?
gonna help.
Yeah, it's like, and she was like, and how is he supposed to get a message back? And he was like, well, that's his problem. And I was like, really, dude? Like, come on. So episode three almost felt like it was going to be kind of filler because stuff was happening, but it wasn't.
The
Oh my God. Okay. We got Gwendolyn Christie being awesome, showing up with some shears, talking about, "Have you come here to kill me?" And she's like ready to do battle. And then my favorite thing is they were like, "Do they have pouches? We want to see your stomachs to see if you have pouches." And I was like, "What?" And it's just the whole idea of the fact that all the different departments have these crazy just things about each other, you know? Just lies that Lumen has spread so that they don't talk to each other and they don't cooperate. So that, yeah, that's insane. But yes, the goat department of husbandry, or
Is
whatever
this
she
the
called it.
episode where Milchick gets
Oh, the
the
painting.
is gifted the paintings
You're right. To make it
of
feel
Lumen
like he's in,
history?
yeah, to make him feel like he's included. And I was like, I get what you're trying to say, but I also feel like you are pandering to the point that it's just not genuine.
Because Keir, what's the
Egan.
last name? Keir
Egan.
Egan, basically all the Lumen patriarchs are given African American fleshstone
Oh, in his
to make
paintings, yes. To
for
me, in
in
these
this
paintings.
gift
So weird.
that, and it's just like, ooh,
I
it would be like
know.
giving it would be like giving a black kid a history book with the founding fathers as all African American instead of Anglo.
Well, I
That'd
like
be like,
Milchick's reaction, which is
oh, I
basically
do
to take
too.
it and put it up as far away from anything as he possibly can.
That was the first indication that Milchick is not completely drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Because almost in every other way, it seems like he's completely on Team Lumen.
So to me, episode three, the highlight and revelation is the Natalie character.
Ah, yeah.
Because so when we see her earlier, she helps us understand how the board works and how absurd it is about how someone has to speak to the board of directors. It happens again here, but to what Tom and Allison were talking about, when she's the one who presents him with these paintings, and she talks about how she received them too, and the look on her face, I felt like she was that actress from Get Out. The one who's like, no. Like her smile is so forced that you see something else underneath it, like she's a prisoner inside of her own body. I thought that both the character and the actress in that episode, one because of that scene where she presents the paintings, but also when she visits Mark at home and the way she's communicating with him and almost forcing him, but not saying anything. The subtleties of that, I just really thought she shone in that episode. So it was worth it just watching her performances and her scenes.
Yeah, she plays it like a hostage. It's like if
Yes.
she doesn't keep smiling, then they're going to detonate the bomb inside her head, or you know.
Exactly.
Like,
Exactly.
yeah.
Yeah. Oh no, we got to talk about the end of the episode, which is Mark finally getting reintegrated, but we don't know what that means. Like, I was not expecting reintegration to happen this soon.
So soon.
I mean, I knew, I figured it was going to happen, but this was way earlier than I thought, and so I was really pleasantly surprised that they did that. And I liked that when she was turning the levers, he started forgetting stuff, and he was she was like, "What is the color of your mother's eyes?" He goes, she was like, "Seriously, dude?" And he was that was good. And then you see it all click, 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 and then it goes to black, and you're like, "Oh my God!" And then they start episode four completely different. With the and the innies, like, I was just sitting there watching this episode, just going, what's going on? What's happening? I don't understand. What's like that's the first 10 minutes of the episode was just me kind of repeating this because at first I was like, wait, is this the outies on a trip? Wait, this is the innies? Why are they there? What's going on? Why are they there? And then I was like, wait, did they play these episodes out of order? Like I was having every kind of thought that was just insane watching this episode.
Okay. Is anybody else besides me suspicious that ORTBO, the acronym for Outdoor Retreat Team Building Occurrence,
says robot,
is an anagram for robot?
Yes, I saw that. I think the whole thing is you can't trust anything Lumen says, especially when Milchek was like, this is the tallest waterfall in the world. And I was like, that's probably not the tallest waterfall in that park. He said it with such sincerity. Like, he is so full of it. Milchek lies, like, every word out of his mouth.
He follows his script perfectly.
I feel like he was making up some of that script. And then why plant a dead, bloated seal on their path? Like, what was that about? Like, everything about this episode was crazy. They send them on a literal quest. I felt like they were playing a video game. They were like, you need to follow the path.
Complete with CGI avatars of themselves.
Yeah, it was just like,
I didn't know what those were. They apparently, from what I understand,
they were their stand-ins. They were
they
their
got,
stand-ins.
Yeah, it's not
oh,
even
they were the
them.
Stand-ins?
Yeah, it's not even them standing there in another shot. They got lookalikes.
Other actors.
Yeah, they got
yes.
other actors that
to,
look like
to
them.
To do that. And of course, they're all standing there looking like zombies with their heads like this as they're pointing. And I mean, it was just so weird, as in a show that just does weird constantly, this stood out as being extra special weird. Yes. I mean, all just everything that they did, and they're so great at coming up with these tableaus that just make you go, what is going on? Like, in the middle of this wilderness, seeing a television just
sitting there
on an AV cart from the 70s,
yes.
from a 70s
yes.
elementary school.
Right.
Yes,
it was all insane. Everything about it was insane, but
amazing.
I really like, there's this point where they're like sitting and they're in the tents and they're telling the stories, and he's telling this incredibly just bizarre story about the brother Dieter and how he died. And you're just like, wait, what?
For self-pleasuring?
Yeah. So he basically, and then his hair turned to sap and it came off, and then his eyeball popped. I was like, what are you guys even talking about? And what was so crazy was Dylan was like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. I was like, shut up. Like, no, it doesn't. And then the part where Helly starts like laughing and stuff and mocking them, that was where I doubted myself. I was like, wait, is that Helly? Like, cause that felt like something Helly would do. Like, just mock him and make fun mm-hmm. of him. It felt very Helly. But then when she said what she said to Irving, I was like, dude, that was mean. Like, why would you say that?
That was
but,
definitely.
But really, for me, it was the scene where he was basically calling her on her lie. And he was like, you can tell me the truth. You can tell me. And she, her expression just changes. Like, she's like, oh, no, I'm totally innocent, blah, blah, blah. And then she has this, like, something just comes over her face. And she just kind of tilts her head and looks at him and walks out. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, Elena. That flash yeah. in her eyes, because yeah. her eyes suddenly just go dead.
Yep.
And I mean, I that was remarkable. That was yeah. that was absolutely an exquisite moment of acting. Because in just that expression in her eyes for a second, you realized exactly who she was.
Yep.
And you could see the hate pouring out of her. And I thought that was brilliant. And then she brings herself back again, you know. It's like, it was so perfectly done.
So that actress, I've liked her.
Brent Lower.
Yes. Otherwise known as B-Low, right? So I've liked her in this show all along. I'd say the moment you all just described, as well as in the prior episode, when she and Mark were on the floor, on the severed floor, and they had a whole conversation without saying words with one another in the hallway, made me more of a fan of hers. Because exactly what you talked about, how you see the shifts, how you see the changes, how you even see language when she's not saying anything. So I'd say those two episodes together made me much more of a fan of hers, beyond the fact that I liked her already. I just thought that they were really high caliber work. Speaking of high caliber work, the imagination and I'd almost say the fearlessness that you have to be willing to exhibit to put together the last episode is impressive. Like, who does that? Who
Change
says,
the entire
okay,
premise of their show.
it's like now we're gonna have him out in the wilderness in the snow, right? And then this guy's gonna spill his seed in the soil. Like, how do you even come up with that stuff? It's this show is just, it's brave, it's imaginative. I love the visual style of it. I keep falling in love with how it's shot, and how the images are not centered, how they use one side of the screen is heavier than the other side of the screen. I just continue to be impressed.
We're running out of time, so I
Could we
want to talk
skip
about
past
the end. No.
Helly and Mark ass knocking boots and
Well,
get
that's
to?
what we're going towards the end. So them having, if especially after that scene, we now as an audience are pretty sure that this is Helena. And so then they have the sex scene, which I was totally disturbed by, instead of it because they shot it like it was supposed to be romantic, and I was like, I was watching it like that with like one eye open. And I really love that Irving, when he's going on his dream walk or whatever, and he sees the screen, in that screen, if you're paying attention, it has a it ends up forming the face, Helly's face, and it says Egan. And that's how, when he wakes up, he's like, oh, like it was like a revelation. And then when he comes back, they have this big confrontation. And that was just brilliant. Like, I thought by the energy, I was like, somebody's about to die. Like, I didn't know who was going to
I was
die.
surprised he survived this episode.
Well, did he though? Because that's the
Well,
thing.
it any version did not. Audi
That's
did.
my point. My point is, Irving B did not survive. And so, when I was watching that scene and the buildup of the tension, I was like, somebody's about to kill somebody. And I thought she was just going to kill him. And instead, he like tries to drown her, and it re gets revealed to all the to the innies that, you know, she was spying on them. She was the mole. And if I was Mark, I would feel like a serious level of betrayal and shame, because he couldn't tell the difference.
But here's
Well,
the
to be
thing,
fair,
though. He was behaving like a moron right before that. So, to be fair,
Is that fair?
I
Here's the thing,
mean,
though.
when they execute Gilead Protocol or whatever it was, it starts with a G.
Glacier something. Yeah, go ahead.
When they execute that, and Helly is, Helena tells them bring Helly back.
Right.
Helly has no knowledge of what Helena just did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's all
So
on
next
Mark.
issue is going to be crazy because everybody's going to be like, you were spying on us. It's like, huh? Because she's
No,
not going to
they
know.
know that Helly didn't spy on them. They know that. They
Right.
know the
Yeah,
difference.
no, probably the
That
last thing that she remembers is waking up in the middle of the Egan Gala.
Right.
And
Yes.
so, you know, this is going to be very awkward when she
Awkward.
actually has a conversation with him. By the way, did it occur to anyone? It's like, as I was watching it, it suddenly occurred to me, no, normally the Innie's entire existence is working in an office.
Right.
And the Irving's dream that we see may be the first experience his Innie has ever had sleeping and dreaming.
Oh, that's true.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a good
So,
point.
yeah. And I mean, this may be an entirely new experience for all of
I
them.
also thought
Well,
this was the first.
seeing the sky was a new experience for all of them,
All of them,
too.
right? I just want to just talk about, for me, the thing that hit me the hardest was when Milchek is yelling at Irving and saying, "We will erase you. We will make
You
sure
will
as if
have
you never
never
existed."
existed.
And then he walks away. He's got this smile on his face, and he basically, you know, they snap him to Audi version. And I was like, he basically is dying. I mean, he's dying. And I was really sad.
No,
I was like, my God. Like, it really got me. It really got me.
there is no more Irving.
I know. Irving B. There's still
Irving
a,
B, rather.
yes.
Yes, there's still his Audi version. And I mean,
I wonder
I
if his
have,
Audi version is going to become an activist, though.
I think his Audi version
I think
already
he's
was.
already, yeah, he was involved in something,
Oh, that's right.
clearly. And I think that that is eventually going to lead to, you know, I mean, that's, I don't think that's going to be a permanent death for any Irving. I think he's going to find a way of coming back, even if it's just through integration again.
Oh, if he gets reintegrated. Yeah.
If he gets reintegrated, I think that, you know, we're going to see him definitely.
He's definitely the MVP of this episode.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the thing is, you know, he was already
and Britt
so.
Lower.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, my God. Yes. But I think the thing with Irving is that, remember, he was on the verge of just leaving before,
right, anyway.
And accepting oblivion because he's, you know, he was so miserable to be, you know, without his true love. And I think he was ready to die for a cause because he doesn't really feel like he has anything to live for.
Yeah. So. I see that too, but I was still very sad. That's all.
Oh yeah.
And
so
I want, and I can back up Malik a little bit in that I think Mark S, because I'm waiting for that reintegration to really work, because it looks like it was starting to work.
We saw the flashes.
Yeah, the flashes.
You saw the flash.
But man, he was dumb this whole episode. Like, dude, what are you doing?
Horny.
Like, you know. Well, yes. Also, point out this was probably the first time he's ever had sex. So they said that, I think I saw an interview, and they said that first season was them as being like children, infants, and this season is them
being adolescents.
And I was like, okay, I guess I get it. But anyway, but let's wrap this up. We're all saying thumbs up.
Oh yeah.
So that's all we have for this week. So like and subscribe and follow us, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Goodbye.